And it was, which I said, well, it was, you had done an hour's work or so before breakfast was always on, see? And I mean, it, of course, usually on a Sunday morning, they always had bacon and eggs or ham and eggs. Of course, it was all of our own. We didn't have, never had to buy it or anything.
Pancakes?
Oh, God, yes, pancakes. Spring of the year, especially, pancakes and syrup.
And the cereal would be oatmeal?
Yes, that was about it. I don't ever remember having a cornflakes until I don't know, when I was in high school, I guess, whatever. It was either cornmeal, oatmeal, or cream of wheat. That's what it was.
Now, would you use your own oats for oatmeal?
No, never. I never knew them to grind oats for our own oatmeal, never. No, but that's another thing Grandpa used to buy. I don't know how they used to come, but they had a big old thing, I can see it now, a big wooden keg, or barrel. It was more or less of a barrel, only it was kind of a square thing, and it'd be full of oatmeal, and he used to buy two or three of those. And another thing he used to get an awful lot of, well, everybody did in the valley, they'd go into Cross Bakery out to Montpelier. You could buy a barrel of crackers for 50 cents. They were what they called the odds. And oh God, we'd cracker and milk, we always had that.
Now you can't buy those with the size that they were, and if you buy these little ones and they cost, they're out of sight, the price. They don't even taste the same.
No, they don't. They say they're Vermont crackers, but they don't taste like the ones they used. Of course, the bigger they used to get were like I'd see across crackers. 50 cents for a barrel of the odd, the throwouts they call them. They might be curled over or something and they just throw them in. And so we always bought them because there was a man from Warren at Mobus that used to work at there. He was one of the head ones in the bakery and people all here knew him and he'd tell them about it. And oh, they'd go out and get them as fast as they could get them. No. It was, your meals, like I say, were all altogether different. And then, of course, at noon, it was noon. You didn't get your meal later on. It was at 12 o'clock, you ate. That's when you ate. Then at night, we usually tried to get all of the chores all done, milking and all, before, by 6 o'clock at night. And that's when we'd eat our supper. They call it dinner now, but that's when we'd eat it. But our big meal was always at noon, 12 o'clock usually.
And what would you have at noon?
Oh, God. Beef, pork, all depend on venison a lot of the time. And potatoes, gravy. It was the main thing. And peas or beans or corn, of course, we raised them all on the own.
Dried beef gravy, codfish gravy.
Oh God, that's what we used to like. Of course, I still do today if it won, but I'm not supposed to have any of that stuff. But I could sit down codfish gravy, or your salt, and salt salmon gravy. God, my daughter-in-law works in the fish market up here in Mehurin's now, and she showed me a piece of pink salmon the other day, red salmon, salt salmon. $7.99 a pound. I said, God, I don't think I want any of that.
And how would you make salmon gravy?
Just the way you would codfish gravy, just exactly the same way. They'd break it up all in little pieces and put the thickening with it. And it was a milk gravy, I call it, is what I'd call it. But oh God, it was good. They very, very seldom, well, Grandpa used to get, I don't know what it was he used to get for fish, besides codfish, but he used to buy whole fish, you know, haddock probably or something, and then he'd slice it up himself. And we used to have that once in a while, but of course, back then, I don't know, my family was, I mean, they were scared of the damn bones in the fish, afraid of the kids getting bones. So we didn't have too much fish that had any bones in it, unless it was brook trout or something, we'd get, always get them, but no.
How about game? Partridge?
Oh yes, we'd eat all of those, all coons, gray squirrels. Back then, there used to be a lot of gray squirrels. My mother used to make a, well, they call it a game pie. We boys would get a lot of coons in the fall of the year, especially, and coon, and gray squirrel, and partridge, and rabbit mixed all together. And it makes a real, real good dish. Of course, rabbits are good anyway. We used to eat a lot of them. We had tame rabbits that were domestic, we raised on the farm. We eat one of them once in a while. But, and of course, had their own chicken. Used to eat a lot of chicken then, just same as they do now. Well, it was.
And then would your mother and grandmother make pies and stuff?
Oh, yes.
For
yes, they did.
Noon?
Pie after pie after pie. Yeah. Usually had pie, well, we kids had it more than we should have, I guess. We used to have a big pantry, and we used to get in there once in a while. Cookies. They made all of that. You never had. We had a big old tin thing full of cookies. I don't know how many pies they used to make at a time, 10, 12 or more at a time, you know. And we had all of our own apples on the farm. We never had to buy apples, always had to put them down cellar and own potatoes. But most of the farms around here then did, they didn't have to.
And made your jams and jellies?
Oh yeah, made everything I got. They wanted currant and berries, you know, we'd pick wild strawberries for hours at a time, go out in the pasture and fields and try to pick wild strawberries because you used to love them.
My father had cultivated raspberries and they were beautiful berries. We used to help pick those and he'd take them and he could hardly give those berries away for 25 cents a quart.
Yeah.
Or it was even less than that.
Less than that? When we used to take them to Northfield.
And then sometimes it was hard to even get rid of them.
Gosh.
Yep.
Beautiful berries.
When I was helping him up on the farm there. We had strawberries too.
No, he didn't have too many strawberries.
No.
But he had
and potatoes. He used to load his truck.
He raised good potatoes.
Raised his truck and we used to load it on a Saturday. And he had regular customers anyway, Northfield and Montpelier around places, you know. And I'd help him. Once in a while you'd take an extra load because you thought, well, you couldn't sell them for 50 cents a bushel for potatoes. No.
My sisters and I, we'd go right out and help pick up potatoes in the fall.
Dug them all in by, well, you didn't dig them by hand, but you might just as well have, I call it.
And he had a sugar orchard too, and he made syrup.
Well, now you said noon was your big meal. At supper, what would you have?
Fried potatoes again, or boiled potatoes or something. Oh, yeah, we had potatoes usually three times a day. That was we always did, three times. A lot of people didn't. But, and then lots of times at night you'd have what was left over at noon. See? And so there was nothing thrown away here. It was all made good use of.
Did you have lots of stews and hashes?
Oh yes, when it was ground up beef and potato and hash and then red flannel hash, because we used to have a lot of that. And when it was, of course, we could have that in the middle of the winter because we had beef downstairs in the sand. They used to bury them in the sand, keep them all.
The beef or the
beets? Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beef was, what we used to do, because we raised a lot of oats, and that was one thing we kids had to do after they packaged the beef, you know, when they butchered it, and same as the pork in the fall. Of course, I got to tell you, there again, it goes back to this damned weather. In the last of October and November, you could make up your mind, that was it. It was going to freeze up. So you could hang your beef up and you didn't have to worry about it. But what they used to do was Grampy would cut it up, and usually ours was 5 to 6, 7 pound things, everything, because that's what it cost took to feed the family. And then he'd wrap it in newspaper. And we'd bury it in the oat bin. We had three different big oat bins. It would hold probably 100, 150 bushel apiece, each one of them. And we could go, you could go up there in the 4th of July and get a piece of beef out of that oat bin, and it was froze just as hard as a rock.
And where would your oat bin be?
Outdoors, in a, well, not outdoors, but in another barn, a shed off to one side. Oh yeah, because we had to have a roof over it and everything, keep it dry for the horses, you see, the grain and stuff. But it would, oh yeah, because you see, putting it down in there, there's no air get to it, because the, and that's the way we kept it all. Lots of times you'd clean out a bin in the fall of the year before we had to put the new in, and you'd run out of a piece if somebody had forgot down in there, they hadn't got it out yet. And it'd be just as frozen, just as hard as could be. That's the way all of, most of that stuff was up. And then I tell her, she laughs a lot, and a lot of them do. What they call, what we used to have was what we call swatamoka.
Swatamoka?
Swatamoka. It was more or less head cheese. That's what it was. When they butchered, there was nothing left. Everything was boiled right off the bones. And it was ground up and put right into the pig's intestines. We'd boil them, of course, then turn them wrong side up, and boil them again, and then fill
Sounds
them
delicious.
Up.
Sounds delicious.
My husband's made it.
Well, uh-huh. We would hang them up in what we call the attic off of the bedroom upstairs. It had no heat, and it'd be just as cold, and when we wanted one, we'd go in and get it. Oh, sure, it was, that was, she laughs at a lot of things we used to have up on a farm, and I tell them today, they say that everything is, pork is bad for you, but that's one thing, my grandfather on the table, our dining room table, had a big old bowl, I don't know, must have held 3 gallons, and it was full of sliced raw pork and onions in vinegar, and I've eaten that good many a day after day. And he lived to be 96 years old.
What did he call that?
Nothing, it just salt pork, and it was a brine, I suppose, the vinegar.
There might have been a name for it.
Well, probably was, but I never knew. And we used to take another thing we kids used to like especially, and of course had the old hand grinder. We'd take salt pork, fresh salt pork, and because we kept it in the crock downstairs, of course, cellar all the time, had a barrel full of that all the time. And we'd go down and slice it off, and then get some of the oldest bread my grandmother had and grind it up, bread and the pork. And then it would make a, it would moist enough so you can make a ball of it. We used to love it for sandwiches. And then you, if you put it in a frying pan, it was awful good.
What about for like Christmas or Easter? Would you have special meals then?
Usually. They had, I don't know if you call it much special, but usually they, what we used to do with Christmas and Thanksgiving, my mother's family, the Richardson family, would come to our place at one, and we would go to theirs the other, so they switch off every other year, Christmas and Thanksgiving. And usually Grandpa Richardson always raised turkeys, so we'd usually, at Christmas we'd usually have turkey, duck, or goose, and chicken. You could have all four of them if you wanted them, but that's what they usually, yeah. But a goose was good. I like goose, but it was usually it was just a chicken, and then I've known Thanksgiving when we'd have nothing but a big pork roast, a good pork roast, and have nothing. Nothing about anything much special about it. Of course, all your presents were, well, I tell them I graduated, I guess, from the 8th grade before I know I did, before I ever had any bought in clothes. It was always made. Mother and grandmother made them all. Never had any. And then it handed down to one, like what Ed didn't wear, I'd get the next year and so on. That's the way it went. Yeah.
Did they do some of the stuff I've seen has been beautifully the grain bags, they would bleach them, and then the embroidery sometimes you see. Did your mother and grandmother do that?
No, they never did any of that. I know out of green bags.
I think actually it was a lot of the French people that did that.
Which I can't tell of that. Aunt Lizzie, well, it was Merrill. You said you interviewed Merrill. Well, it was his mother. She was, her husband, Merrill's father, and my grandmother were brother and sister. That was it. And Aunt Lizzie was, she wasn't all there. She was a good old woman. God, she was a good woman. But she was funny, and somewhere she went down to this Walter Jones store one time in Waitsfield at Christmas or sometime, and she was, Walter was always picking on her, and Aunt Lizzie had a pair of bloomers on, of course, they wore at that time, and she stooped over to do something, and Walter Jones said to her, "My God, Lizzie," says, "what kind of bloomers are those you got on?" She says, "By Gad, Wallery," she says, "they're lay or bust." And that's what it was. That was the kind of grain
lay
you had.
Lay or bust?
It, yeah, lay or bust at that time. That was the kind of grain you fed you. And she'd made herself a pair of bloomers. The lay or bust right across her old rear end.
Oh, she was something. She was okay. Also related to this, what we call a hired lady, woman, a hired girl.
Yeah.
It was up working for my mother. And she, when she first came over from, this Maggie came over from Ireland, she went up there and stayed for a little while with this Aunt Lizzie you were talking about. And she asked Maggie one day, "Do you like pumpkin pie?" "Oh, yes," she liked them. So she said she got out the pumpkin and cooked it, and then she went and under her bed hauled out an old window screen and put it over the iron, black iron sink and strained the pumpkin right into the sink.
Oh, yeah.
And Maggie said by the time she made that pie, she said she passed it to her. She said she didn't want it, didn't care for any. Well, I thought you liked it.
Oh, God. She, about you talk about a cook, that woman. Oh, my God. We used to just love to
see her cooking.
We used to love to stop. She made donuts, plain donuts, on at the garden. She always brought them out to we kids. And we used to like to get down there to eat, but I don't know. Sometimes I wonder.
But you didn't know it didn't hurt you, I guess, then.
No, well, we didn't know. Well, we knew, but we still loved to go there to eat just the same because her bread and, oh, God, it was good. Yeah. But she was an awful, awful good old lady, but she was way off. <yeah. laughs>
Well, now, did you have the same kind of food, pretty much?
Yeah.
Same kind of thing for Christmas?
Yeah, we'd have usually, but sometimes roast pork, sometimes roast chicken, and not very often. Once in a great while, we'd have roast turkey. They didn't raise turkeys, didn't have them, so. And breakfast would be on like every weekday breakfast would be hot cereal and muffins and coffee and milk. And then they had the big meal at noon because, you know, they had the men working. And then she would still have a big meal at night, and it was...
They used always most all of the farmers. Right? They had three good meals, anyway. You could plan on that wherever you went. Yeah. And they always seemed to have enough. That was when they went, well, like when I was up with her father on the farm there, there was Carol Neal, Ward Jocelyn, and her father. They used to swap off in corn cutting time. One would have a harvester, one would have a blower, and they'd go in, "No problem, we'll do yours today and ours," and that's the way I was. And of course, when they did, all of the hired men, all of the men there come into that house to eat, see. They fed the whole bunch of them. I mean, sometimes it was 12, 13 extra, 14 extra people, because it was, but it, they, that's the things they don't do today. If I go over and help you, well, you owe me so much. Then it was, well, you got your corn in, I got mine in, so what the hell, we don't need to pay anything, and that's the way it went back then.
It was hard on my, with my folks anyway. In the summer, a lot of the relatives from out of state would come to visit. Of course, a great place to come to the farm. But they had a lot of extra help, you know, and a lot of meals to get. And my mother had just had one batch of company leave, and she was tired.
Yeah.
And she called her mother, who lived nearby at that time, and she had just gotten a letter in the mail. One had just left that day, and that someone else was coming. And she said, "I can't do it." Or she said her mother got a hold of them somehow and told them that she just could not have them. But they think, you know, they got a farm illness, everything's...
Oh, sure.
And I guess, too, a number of people used to come up and stay at different farms in the summer.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes.
What was it, wasn't there kind of a...
What they call border, summer border.
Yeah.
Yeah, border, that's what they used to call. Well, Stafford's down below you there used to take borders. And then another one was over by the DeFreeze from the Cold Spring Farm. They used to take every year. Well, not too many. Usually Carr and Andrew had four people at the most. But they had one family that came there for years and years.
And I gather they used to hike on the Long Trail.
Oh,
and...
sure. That was one of our great things in the fall.
Oh, well, tell me about that.
After we got all done haying and oats and everything else was all in, or between haying and oats, it was usually 3 or 4 weeks of, you know, laying over from one, doing one job to the next. So it was Sterling Livingston and myself, it was Glenn Boswell up on the hill. We used to take at least 2 weeks and hike on the Long Trail.
Is that right?
My father would take us he might take us up to the Canadian border, which back then was a long way, but it was in the 30s, late 30s. And then we would hike down maybe to Mount Mansfield. And then he'd pick us up there, or we'd hike home one or two. Then the next year we'd go to Mount Mansfield and hike maybe through the Warren and come down Lincoln Mountain. And so I've traveled a whole length of the Long Trail here in the state of Vermont, Sterling Livingston and I guess we're the only two left here that has done it, two or three different times. We've hiked the whole length of, we've always wanted to, but we decided now we're getting too old to take it from right up in Maine and go through to Georgia the way it goes now. But then of course it quit, see, the Canadian line, they didn't have it any further. And the end of Vermont, they never had it any further. And now, of course, you can go clear through to Georgia on the Long Trail.
The Appalachian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Appalachian, yeah. But it was, oh God, yeah, that was nice. I mean, we would try to do 6 miles a day. Sometimes we didn't if we had to hit a lodge, you know, we liked. And of course, then there was all kinds of them on the mountain. My God, they were, well, about 3 miles apart, they would be. Yeah. And of course, you took your own stuff with us and cooked it, but it was a lot of fun.
How long would you take? 2 weeks, did you say?
Usually, we would go up 2 weeks. If we thought we had the time, we would spend 2 weeks, and if we thought the weather had been so that the crops were going to be ready to get in, well, but we always went over a week, 10 days anyway. Always, yeah, we hiked every year. Long Trail. I try to say it's...
That's one thing where I've never been. I've never been on the Long Trail.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll start doing it now.
I was wondering, one time they had this Professor Monroe. He used to own a Crouching Lion farm down at the foot of Camel's Hump on this side, Duxbury. He had a whole lot of pictures and things of me in the New York time. I was the youngest person to ever hike a Long Trail and carry my own pack. I wasn't quite 5 years old. We went up, my father and mother, my older sister, and my brother Ed, and myself, and then this professor and his wife used to have a summer home in Warren, Newell's from Massachusetts, he and his wife and the two children, two boys. And we hiked from Lincoln Mountain through to Camel's Hump and come down, and I was the youngest fella that ever been on a Long Trail that carried my own pack all the way. Yeah. But like I say, woods, outdoors is my life. It always has been. I could spend day and night outdoors in the woods.
Now, did you do much trapping?
I used to. Now she won't let me because she says it's too hard for me.
How did you learn to trap?
Just by starting in, setting. First we used to trap nothing but coons and skunks. And then of course you get smarter animals like fox and minks and things. Why, I just suggest by reading National Sportsman or things like that about different fellows we used to follow with. V. Lynch from up in Maine used to write in that, and he would tell great big how to set the trap and everything else, illustrations and all in the magazine. And so Ed and I both, we trapped, used to get pretty good at it in the fall.
Well, it was a real art, I guess, to mixing scents.
Oh, it is when you get to it, especially foxes and minks and things like that. It's, you got to be.
Was there a local guy that would sort of help you out?
No, Merrill Long used to be a big trapper. He and Roy both. Roy was a good trapper, and they used to help us out when we were kids. Of course, started us on skunks and foxes. Our coons, but then more or less Roy showed us how to set they call them man water sets. They never did do any that I know dry sets the way they do now most everybody. But he showed us how to do the horse, and I guess we just picked it up from there and kept going. We used to pick up quite a lot of money, and then in high school down there, my brother, well, it was my brother-in-law later on, he and I had 300 traps we used to set out in the river up there for mink, and mostly then it was just mink and muskrat. We'd pick up $2,000 in the fall, a month's time.
Which river was this?
The Mad River.
Mad River?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Used to, across the Merrimack over there, there was one place, they called it the Cove. Where they cut ice on, I could catch, or we could, a couple of 300 muskrats in there in the fall of the year, every year.
Okay.
Next year there'd be just as many or more. Yeah.
Are they still there now, or?
I went down there 2 years ago, I guess the last year I trapped, or 3 years ago I went down, and the beavers are taking it all over now, and I don't like to bother them. No.
Yeah, because in the old days, there weren't too many beaver around.
Oh, God, no. I can remember when there wasn't a beaver around there.
Yeah, did they?
Not that you could see anyway. I guess maybe back in the woods, way back, but I can remember for years there was no beavers. And, of course, it wasn't too many years now that they'd have been able to trap them again anyway. But
yeah, because I always noticed going down through Granville Woods.
Yeah. God. State dig them out before they get them dug out to get them back in again. They're sure. I just read a big story in one of these magazines here about them. I was telling her yesterday about how they build their house up for their living quarters and everything. And that's the way a beaver builds, and that's why he puts, the one I was reading in there said it 2 to 3 ton of wood, apple bushes and poplars, alders and things, they take and bury them or stick them somehow in the bottom of the mud, in the bottom of their pond for food during the winter. And that's what they do. And then they have a room that they take it into where they eat it, and then they chew the bark up so that it's fluffy, and they sleep in that. That's what they sleep in their sleeping quarters. They have 5 rooms in the house. A bathroom,